Begin the current daf. Masechtas Avodah Zarah daf mem dal. Begin on the bottom of mem gimel mem beis. Three lines up from the bottom of the amud. The Gemara continues with the next mishnah, which is connected in a continuation of the previous mishnah. The previous mishnah had described someone finds vessels that have three different types of images on it: sun, the moon, this drag darkoina type of an image, where we could assume that that's Avodah Zarah. So the Tana Kama, the Tana of the previous mishnah said, "Yilichim liyam amelach, throw it to the Dead Sea." And then our Mishnah continues with a different opinion. Rabbi Yisi, I mean, he says, Sheikhik, you grind it down, Zer l'ruach, and you throw it to the wind, because if you throw it whole into the Yam HaMelech, another Jew might find it. It might have benefit from it and violate the halacha of Liyit Bagriyat Chamu'um HaMenachem. So if it says, Rabbi Yisi, what you do is, you grind it down, Zer l'ruach, and you throw it to the wind, or you throw it into the sea, but you make sure there's measures that no one's going to ever get to it. Amrullah, and that they said to him, what do you mean? Afhu. So even this individual, Rabbi Yisi, that you're describing, if he's going to pulverize it and throw it to the wind, even now, a Jew is going to have benefit from it. Why? Because Nasa Zevel, it's going to become fertilizer, and it's going to fertilize the Jewish people's fields, thus violating the Isra of having benefit from Avodah Zarah. Shanam, like it says in the Pasuk, Yidbak biyotchem u'umim enachem, you shouldn't have anything attached to it from that which is forbidden, that of Avodah Zarah, and therefore that's not a viable option of grinding it down and dispersing it to the wind, because that's going to come into fertilizer, and they can have benefit from Avodah Zarah in that way. Now, the Gemara elaborates on this. Tanya Litna Braisa, Amlem Rabbi Yisi. Rabbi Yisi said to the Chacham, he said, what do you mean? I could prove to you that this is a viable option. For like Varnam, the Pasuk says in Devarim that Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jewish people of Eschataschem that your sin, as it contains up of Memdal and Menalav, Asher Asisim as Ekel, that which you made the golden calf. Lakachti, says Moshe Rabbeinu, what I did when I came down from Har Sinai and they saw you did the Ekel, I took it, Ve'estrav Oysa Be'eshen, I burnt it in fire, Ve'akas Oysa, and I pounded it, Tochen Hetev, I grinded it down very, very well, Adeshadak La'offer until it was thin like dust. And then I threw its dirt, its dust, to the valley, to the stream that came down from the mountain. Which the question that Rabbi Yisi is asking is from we grinded it down, but from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu burnt it, that wouldn't be a viable question on the Chacham who disagreed with Rabbi Yisi, because as long as it's not grinded down, it's still attached, even if it burned, and that cannot be used as fertilizer. The problem of running at the fertilizer that they told him is only if it's grinded down very thin. But one thing we see is that Moshe Rabbeinu went and took the Avodah Zarah of the Egel and he grinded it down very thin, and he wasn't concerned that these dust-like particles are going to become fertilizer for the ground. So on that Amrullah, so on that, the Chacham responded to Rabbi Yisi, Misham Raya, is there a proof from there? Harei Yoim, the Pasuk says in Shemais, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do with the Egel? It says, Vayizer al Pnei HaMayim, he dispersed it on the surface of the water, where there is no concern about it becoming fertilizer. Fertilizer is only if it's going on the ground. Now, so why didn't he go ahead and then throw it into the sea in its whole state? Why did he have to pulverize it? That's not because, like Rabbi Yisi's option of, oh, because when you pulverize it, it's okay. No, you do usually run into the problem of having enough from it. In this case, however, like the pasuk continues, because Vayishak etz b'nei Yisrael, and he gave the Jewish people to drink from that water which had the pulverized pieces of the eagle inside of it. As the Gemara explains, l'niskaven el l'baitken kesaitis, his whole intention was to inspect the Jewish people like the laws of the suspected adulterous woman, where just like over there when she drinks the woman the water which had the name of Hashem erased inside of it, it checks her in her stomach to see if she actually sinned or not. So too, the water checked the Jewish people who were the sinners, and it killed them. As the Gemara says over there, Masechtas Yuma, there were different types of deaths that the Jewish people had depending on their association with the Chet HaEgel. And that was why Moshe Rabbeinu pulverized it. But yeah, it would be enough just to throw away it whole, because anyways it was going in the water, but to pulverize it and throw it into the ground, that would be problematic, and there's no proof to Rabbi Yisi. So Amar Rabbi Yisi continues, trying to bring a riot to his opinion, that it is a viable option to pulverize it and throw it to the wind, and there is no problem about having hanah from it. Because he says, the Pasuk says in Divrei Yemei Beis, V'gam macha, and also macha, which although the words of our Gemara says, Imoi, the Girtz in the Pasuk is, Eim Asa HaMelech, who is the mother of King Asa, Hasira Megvira. He went and he removed her from her might, meaning he took her down from her royalty. Asher Asasa, that's what she made, and the Girsa is, La Ashera, she made for this Avodah Zarah Ashera, Miflotzes, which Marla is going to explain what exactly that means. But it means to say that she was very attached to Avodah Zarah, and Asa, he was destroying all the Avodah Zarahs, and he took down his mother, who was attached to Avodah Zarah. the Geimer and etc., where like the pasuk there says that also when they cut down es miflatzta, this miflatzes, which was something that his mother had done for the avodah zarah, the Geimer etc., the yadik, and he grinded it, the yisur benachal kidron, and he burnt it in the Kidron Valley. Now, obviously, we see that although he pulverized it, he wasn't concerned for the fact that the particles are going to turn into fertilizer in the valley. So the question is from the Vayodik, that he grinded it down, you see that that's not a concern. Amr Loi, so the Chum responded to Rabbi Yitzchak, Misham Raya, from there is a proof. Nachal Kidron in the Megadol Tzmachin. Yeah, there it's different because that Kidron Valley, nothing grows over there. But generally, in a place where things could grow, it is a concern about becoming fertilizer. That is the Gemara Veloi. Is that really so? Like the Chum responded to Rabbi Yitzchak, that Nachal Kidron, there's no utility of fertilizer because nothing grows over there? But Ratanya, which actually Mishnah Masechtas Yuma, that says, Elu ve'elu. What this is referring to is there's two types of bloods of karbanos in the base of Mikdash. There's the bloods of the karbanos on the outside of Mizbeach, and there's the bloods of the karbanos that are burned on the inside of Mizbeach, the Mizbeach Hazav, where both remnants of those bloods are poured on the foundation of the outer Mizbeach, and then the drips down, that goes from the foundation down to the ground, and it pours out Misarvin Be'ama, then they mix together in this canal which was in the courtyard of the base of Mikdash. And it flows out the Yitzin L'Nachal Kidron and comes out of the Beis Hamikdash into the Kidron Valley. And that blood, v'nimkarin l'ganon l'zavol, it's sold to the gardeners to be used as to fertilize their gardens. U'maylin behen, and there's halach of me'ila on that blood. Now, it wouldn't make someone liable for a carbon me'ila if they went and had benefit from that blood of the karbanos, because there is no me'ila on the blood of Kachim, as the Gemara says over the Masechtas Yuma. But it's rabbinically forbidden to go ahead and have benefit from that blood without paying money beforehand so that a person doesn't come to have benefit from other things of kachem. But one thing we see is that the blood went down to the Kidron Valley and it was sold to those farmers who used it as fertilizer. You see, in Nechal Kidron, there is fertility over there and that they do use fertilizer. So how can you say that there was no problem because of the avodah zarah because it doesn't grow over there? So the Gemara, Mekaymes, Mekaymes, Yeshbay. There are different places in the Kidron Valley. Yeshmalkam, Megadol Tzmachim. There are places that it does grow, and that's what the Mishnah Masechtas Yuma is referring to. Yeshmalkam, Shein Megadol Tzmachim. There are places that it doesn't grow, and that's what the Pasuk in Devar Yom is referring to, where he pulverized it because there was no problem over there of fertilization. But generally, unlike Rabbi Yisi, they would say that there would be a problem of pulverizing and throwing it to the wind. Now the Gemara parenthetically explains, my Miflatzta. What does this mean that his mother made a mefletzes for the avodah zarah of Asherah, which also went and destroyed? So Rabbi Yehuda, he says, to have a mafli litzenus. The word mefletzta is a combination of two words of she did incredible mockery with this avodah zarah. Ketetan Rav Yisrael, Rav Yisrael told a brisim, kimin zachris asasolah. She made like a male member, phallic, on the avodah zarah. And she would cohabit with this inanimate object that had this phallic object every single day. That's incredible mockery that she did. That's what this Meflatzes means, and that's what Asa came to destroy, and that's what he pulverized, and that's what we had brought this pasuk before. So the Raisa continues. So Amlam Rabbi Yisi, he tried to bring another proof that you see it is a viable option to pulverize the Avodah Zarah and throw it to the wind. Because he says, and the pasuk is the Melachim Beis, regarding Chizkiyah HaMelech, it says, V'chisas nachash nacheshes, Asha Osa Moshe. He grinded down the copper snake which Moshe Rabbeinu had made in, as is brought in the Chumash. Why did Chizkiyah HaMelech do this? Because in those days, the Jewish people were sacrificing to the copper snake. So obviously they treated it like an avodah zarah. And what did Chizkiyah HaMelech do? He grinded it down. So you see, the grinding it down is not a concern. Although the particles might go into the ear and go on the ground and fertilize, we see that's not a concern, says Rabbi Yisi. On that Amr Leh, they said to him, Hashem Raya, from there it's a proof. The pasuk says, Hashem said to Moshe, "Say lochosarv." When this incident was happening in the Torah, it says that Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Make for yourself this serpent." The word lacha means mishalcha, from yours. So that copper snake was owned by Moshe Rabbeinu. Ve'ein adam eisur davar she'ein shaloi. And the halachic dictum is that a person cannot make something that which is not his forbidden. In other words, that the people who were sacrificing for it to that copper snake, they couldn't make it forbidden as avodah zarah because it's not their own object. They don't own it to designate it as avodah zarah. So this snake, that was not theirs. It's Moshe Rabbeinu and his family's. Now, and the truth is, even if people were worshipping it, Chizkiah Melech did not have to go ahead and grind it down because it's actually permitted to have benefit from it. It's not classified as a avodah zarah. Like even the chazit, the katol Yisrael baster, it's only because he saw the Jewish people were straying after that copper snake. So Amad v'chisah say, therefore he got up and he grinded it down just to publicize it. But halachically, there was no necessity of grinding it down, and therefore there's no problem about it going and fertilizing because you actually let him benefit from it, and therefore there's no raya to Rabbi Yisi. So Amad v'chisah, Rabbi Yisi continues trying to bring a raya. V'alekvarnem, the pasuk says in Shmuel Beis, regarding the Plishtim, says, v'yazvu shames atzabeim, they left over there their idols, Vayisoyim David v'anashav, and David and his men who conquered the Plishtim, they went and they wore vayisoyim. Now, and that explains Rabbi Yisi, my mashma the high vayisoyim David. And how do I know that when it says over there that what David Melch did to their idols, that it says vayisoyim, that lishna diziru yehu, that it means that he threw it to the wind and after he pulverized it? Can the targum Rabbi Yisi, like Rabbi Yisi translated the Aramaic of the following pasuk that says tizraim, that he threw it, that he dispersed it. Veruach tisam, and the wind was tisam, the same shayrish, the same root of the word you just put down before. Of vayisam David. Umetargaminan, and Rabbi Yosef translates the Aramaic of that pasig, tizrinun, that they should disperse it. Veruach tataltalinun, and the wind should carry it away. So you see the word vayisam means a lotion of zaira, of winnowing, of throwing away to the wind. So you see that that's what David HaMelech did to the Avodah Zarah of the Plishtim. You see that that is a viable option. Amrullah, they said to him, Hashem Raya, wouldn't mean from there is a proof? Harayu Aymer, the Pasuk says in Divrei Yamim that David HaMelech said, Vayisarfu Ba'esh, that they should burn it in the fire. Now, Umedelaik Siv, and the fact that it doesn't say both these ideas of Vayisarim and burning it in one Pasuk, doesn't say Vayisarfu Vayisarim, that they burnt it and they were Vayisarim, which that would sound like, okay, they burnt it and then they threw it to the wind. But it doesn't. It has one pasuk in Shmuel and one pasuk in Divrei Yamim. Shema Minav, and the fact that both of them are not in the same pasuk, that they're not like you, Rabbi Yisi, said, that first it was burnt and then it was thrown to the wind. Rather, it means Vayisoyim Mamish, that they literally carried it with them and they actually went and had benefit from that Avodah Zarah of the Plishtim. And that is first David HaMelech said to his servants to burn it, as the Gemara is going to shortly explain. And then actually they carried away and they had benefit from it. Now, but it doesn't mean like Rabbi Yisi is trying to say, but Yisrael means that they threw it to the wind. Moreover, that the question was only from the fact that it was thrown to the wind. From the fact that David HaMelech said to burn it, that's not a difficulty according to Rabban, like we said, because as long as it's not grinded down, then it doesn't become fertilizer even though that it's burnt. But the question was from the throwing to the wind, and then they said, no, but Yisrael doesn't mean throwing to the wind, it means they carried it away. Now, but then the Gemara says, even according to the Rabbanan are answering, kamakam kasher kra dadi. But then you have a difficulty in the contradictory psukim. One pasuk sounds like that they burnt it, which is that it was forbidden to have benefit from it. And then the other pasuk, in the way the Rabbanan are interpreting by some, that they carried it off and they used it, sounds like that they are permitted to have benefit from it. So that says the Gemara, that's Kedrav Huna. Rav Huna Rami, he posed the following contradiction. He's like, save the pasuk, the B'yam Aleph says, V'yayim David, V'yisar for Beish. David Melch said, and they should burn it in the fire. Uksevi at the pasuk in Shmuel Beis says vayisam and they carried it off. So which one was it, permitted or not? And that's what Rav Huna explained. The lekash is not a difficulty. Kan kaidin sheba ite hagiti. When David before ite hagiti, who is a Philistine soldier that was conquered by David HaMelech and then came over to David HaMelech's camp, before he came to nullify the avodah zarah, so David HaMelech says we have to burn it. Kan la'achar shabo ite hagiti. The other pasuk is talking about after ite hagiti came and he nullified the avodah zarah. Then the pasuk says vayisam David HaMelech and his people carried it off, because since he's an idol, he was a non-Jew, he was able to be mevatel the avodah zarah. That's simply like the pasuk says in Shmuel Beis. It says vayikach as a teres malka me'al resha, that they took the crown of their king from up on their head. Now, this is talking about by the people of Ammon. Although it says Malcolm, their king, however, it's actually referring to their Avodah Zarah, which its name was Milkoim. The same letters, but it's pronounced Milkoim, and it was called that because of the Melucha, as the Pasuk says in Melucha Aleph. So when it says Ateres Malcolm, it's really Ateres Milkoim, which is that they took the crown of its Avodah Zarah, and they took it from on the head, and they put it on the head of David HaMelech, Umishkola Kikrzav, and its weight was a kikr of gold. That, the question is, Mishari Isuri Hananenu. Is that permitted to take the crown of Avodah Zarah and for David HaMelech to use it? But it's prohibited to have benefit from Avodah Zarah. Rav Nachman, that's the same idea. He said, Ita Hagiti Bo Abritli. Ita Hagiti was a non-Jew. He came and he was able to be mevatel that Avodah Zarah, and therefore that's why it was able to be used by David HaMelech. Now, that the question asks a technical question. It says, Mishkola Kikrzov. Its weight was a talent of gold. How is it possible for David HaMelech to have put it on? It's so heavy. It's 60 mana. That's very heavy. And the Pasuk says, Vatihel Reish David, it was on the head of David. How could he put it on? So Amar Yehuda Merav, he says, this that it says, Vatihel Reish David, that was on the head of David, doesn't mean that David HaMelech actually put on that crown. Rather, what it means to say that it was very distinguished and ru'uya lanuach al reish David, and it was fitting and appropriate to be put on the head of David, because, as the Gemara actually is going to explain later on, it was actually made to the measurements and it was a perfect fit on David Melech's head. But it doesn't mean he literally put it on, because it was way too heavy for him to put on his head. Or another approach, he says, even shoya ves hoisaba, that there was actually a magnet in the crown which held up the metal and let it suspend an ear, David Darala, which was holding it up, and therefore that it was possible for David Melech to put on because it wasn't weighing down his head because the magnetic field was keeping it up. Or a third approach of Balazam, he says, Evin Yukara Haisaba had a very precious, expensive gem on it, Sheshava Kikrzav, which was worth a talent of gold. So when it says Mishkola Kikrzav, it means it was the weight as the value of what a weight of Kikrzav is, that's how much it was, but not because it had that weight, because it was actually just a precious gem that was worth that same amount. Now, related to this crown, the Gemara continues, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, David HaMelech says, Zois Haisali, this was for me, Ki pikudecha nitzarti, because your commandments I have safeguarded. So it says the Gemara, Maikama, what's David HaMelech saying? Hachikama, this is what he's saying. Bishar she pikudecha nitzarti, in the reward that I've safeguarded and kept your mitzvahs, Zois Haisali, this was for me, meaning this crown testified on me that I'm fitting to be the king, where that was le'edus, that was a testimony. Says the Gemara, my edus. So what is the testimony of that crown? Rabbi Shimon Levi, Shaya Menicha B'makum Tefillin. David HaMelech put on this crown on the place of where a person usually puts his tefillin, which is the fontanelle, that soft spot on the top of the head where a child, a baby's head is very soft and didn't close up yet. The whole masa, and it actually fit perfectly on his head, and exact measurements showing that the royalty is fit for David HaMelech. Now that is the Gemara, but Vabaya Anuchi Tefillin. How could he put the crown over there? It's exactly where his tefillin are, but he has to put on tefillin. He says, there's place on the head, which is fit for a person to put on two tefillin in the width, whereas other Rishonim have it on the length of that space over there. And therefore, he was able to have the crown on one half and the tefillin on the other half. Now, continuing on this idea regarding this crown, where it fit perfectly on the heads of David HaMelech, and so too for those who are signs of the Davidic dynasty who were fit to be the king. Pasuk says in Devar Yamim Beis, V'yitziu es ben HaMelech, they took out the son of the king, V'yitnu lo es ha-nezer ves ha-edus, and they put on him the crown and the testimony, which is referring to Yayash, who his sister had hid him, because when Asalya killed out all the descendants of the Davidic dynasty, so when he got older, they brought him out, and they put on him the crown, which testified that he is from the children of the king, because for them, the crown fits perfectly. That's what the Pasuk is referring to, Nazir. When it says they put on him Nazir Zuklila, that refers to the crown. And when it says they put on him the Aedus, the testimony, Revi the Merav, Aedus hula based of it, it's a testimony for the Davidic household, Shekala Rola Malchus HaMasai, whoever's fit for the kingdom, it fits him perfectly. Whoever's not fit to be the king, it doesn't fit him. Similarly, the Pasuk says in Malachim Aleph, says, Vadoneiyah ben Chagis, Misnasi Leman Yemlech. Adoneiyah, one of the sons, the son of Chagis, which from the household of David, he lorded himself to say, I'm going to be a king. Now, I'm going to read the Merav. What that means to say is, Shemisnasi lahoma, he attempted to carry it that it fit on his head, but the crown did not fit him, and therefore it was obvious that he's not fit to be the king. Now, although Rashi says that before Rabbi Yehuda had said that it's only fit to be on David HaMelech's head, but they never actually put it on their head, but for one moment they would put it on to check to see if it fits the person, if it's fit to be the king. And here he tried to put it on, and he wasn't able to hold it on his head. Now the Pasuk says over there regarding Adonaiyah, when he tried to attempt to show that he's going to take over the kingdom, it says, V'yasli rechav ha-parashim, he made for himself chariots and horsemen, v'chamishimish rotzim lefanav, and he made for himself 50 men running in front of him. So the Gemara says, my Rivu Sahih, what is the chiddush, what's the novelty of these 50 men, especially since the Pasuk said, V'yasli, that he made for him, sounds like that he did something totally unique. What's so unique for a prince to have 50 men running in front of him? So Tani, we learned, Kulam Nitulei Tchel, all these 50 men had their spleens taken out because the spleen weighs a person down. So he wanted his runners to be very fast. V'chakuki kampas reglaimayu, and they also carved out, they took out the flesh from the soles of their feet, from the bones, where they didn't feel anything because all the nerve endings were taken out, so they could run over thistles and thorns and nothing could stop them. That was what very unique about these 50 runners that Adonijah had made in the attempt to usurp the monarchy. Now, continuing to Amud Beis, the Gemara continues on this theme regarding Avodah Zarah and the prohibition of having benefit from it. So Shaul Proiklis ben Pleisvais, who was a heretical non-Jew, he asked Esrim Gamliel ba'akri. He asked Rabbi Gamliel when he was in Akri, Shaul Yerechitz b'merchet shal Aphrodite, that Rabbi Gamliel was bathing in the bathhouse of Aphrodite, which is the name of Avodah Zarah, and the bathhouse was in the courtyard of that Avodah Zarah Aphrodite. So Proclus asked Rabbi Gamliel, what do you mean? Ksib b'teraskim says in your Torah, and we had quoted this pasuk in the previous Mishnah, it says in Devarim, l'yidbak b'yotcha ma'um menachem, you're not allowed to have anything of that Avodah Zarah attached to you, not have any benefit from it. Why are you bathing in the bathhouse of the Avodah Zarah, of Aphrodite, which is Avodah Zarah, not have any benefit from the Avodah Zarah? So Amalai, Rabbi Gamliel said to him, we don't answer Divrei Torah halachic queries in the bathhouse because a person is naked over there. It's not appropriate to, it's not halachically allowed to say Divrei Torah. When they came out, he responded to him. He says, look, Anilei Basi Begvula. Gamliel says that I didn't come into Aphrodite's boundaries. He bought Begvuli. She came into my boundaries, meaning the bathhouse was here before the Avodah Zarah came. And the bathhouse was made for everyone to bathe over there. Now, there's no right for Aphrodite to come and steal from the public. And therefore, even though she's here now, that doesn't take away my rights of bathing in this bathhouse. Moreover, another response he said is, Ein Oimrim Nasa Merchetz Noil Aphrodite. No one says, let's make this bathhouse as a beautification for the Avodah Zarah Aphrodite. Because a bathhouse is not a beautification of an Avodah Zarah. To the contrary, they say, let's make the Aphrodite, which would beautify the bathhouse. Comes out that she, the Avodah Zarah, is secondary and serving to the bathhouse, and the bathhouse is primary. So therefore, it's not like I'm doing something with Avodah Zarah. If anything, the Avodah Zarah is assisting the bathhouse. Moreover, another idea he told him was, he said to this Proclus, if people would give you a lot of money, for all the money in the world, you wouldn't go into your Avodah Zarah in naked, or Balkari, or with a seminal emission, or urinate in front of it. Whereas this Aphrodite stands by the entryway of the pit, which is made in the ground, which has all the dirty water which goes out into the street from the bathhouse, and everyone's urinating in front of it. It didn't say in the Torah as a prohibition. It says, Abei Tabdin, you should destroy Eloi Heihem, their deities, their Avodah Zarahs. Which says, that's only Eshenoig by Mishum Elaha Aser. Only the types of Avodah Zarahs which are treated as something that they respect, as a god, with a lower letter G, that's prohibited. Whatever's not treated as Elaha, we're hearing people urinating in front of it and dirty water still in front of it, that's permitted, that's no problem about having benefit from that of a desire. Now, we're going to first ask a technical question on this narrative of the Mishnah. The Hecha Abad Hachi Hadrim Liel respond to Proclus in the bathhouse by telling him a halacha that we don't respond to halacha queries in the bathhouse, but that itself is Divrei Torah. Anywhere a person is, he's permitted to contemplate the words of Torah, except for a bathhouse and a lavatory and the bathroom. So you're not allowed to even think Divrei Torah, let alone respond. Now, if you're going to say that he responded to him not in Lashon HaKodesh, but in a non-holy language, some other language of the non-Jews, but from Abaye says, Dvarm shel chayil, mundane matters, which do not relate to Torah law, mutal amr lashon kodesh, you're allowed to even speak it in the bathhouse in words of lashon kodesh in Hebrew. Dvarm shel kodesh, asl amr lashon chayil, holy matters, words of Torah, you're not allowed to say even in some other language like English. Even though it's not Lashon HaKodesh, it still does not lose its status of Kedusha. So how is he able to respond to him, a halacha, by telling him not allowed to say halacha, but it's in the bathhouse? And it wasn't like what we say, Lafusha Meisura, it was some non-Jew. So how could he speak words of Torah? So Tanu, we learned in the Braisa, no, Kisha Yatza Amaloi. The words, when it says that when he went out, he said to him, are also on this. That when he went out is when he told him, Emeshiv Merchas. In the bathhouse, he actually didn't say anything. When he came out, he said, look, I didn't answer you because we don't respond to Torah queries in the bathhouse. Now, regarding the answers that Gamliel had told him, why it wasn't problematic for him to bathe in this bathhouse of the courtyard of Aphrodite, the Sabbath of Zara, Amr B'chama bar Yosef B'Rebbe Amr B'Ishia. So B'chama said over, in the name of his Rebbe, Rebbe Ishia, that Tshuva Ganuva Hishivir Gamliel Isa Hagman, that the response that Gamliel gave to that nobleman was deceptive, meaning he pushed him away with like straw, something that wasn't a real appropriate answer. But says Reb Chama, Vanirman, I say, because he disagrees with his Rebbe Reb Hishu, who he's saying over that statement from, that in the Ganuva, that it wasn't stolen, that it wasn't deceptive, what he responded to. Says the Gemara, Ma Ganuvse, what was the deceptiveness that Reb Hishu holds was not an appropriate response that Mul gave to Proclus? So the Gemara has a few different interpretations. First one is the Kama Loi, where what did he tell him? He says, Zui medis al pi abif. This, the Aphrodite, stands on the pit of all the dirty water. Now, chalod mashtim for that. Everyone's urinating in front of it. And therefore, that's obviously not considered something where it's like Eloheihem, and therefore there's no problem about benefiting from that Avodah Zarah. On that, Rabbi Yishev is bothered. V'chi mashtim b'fenem ayhava. Who cares that they urinate in front of it? V'amar Rabbi says, Pa'ar Yechiach, the Avodah Zarah Pa'ar could disprove that. Shemefaren lefanem b'chol yayim. Everyone defecates in front of it all day. Ve'en abatla, it doesn't nullify it. It's still considered Avodah Zarah. Now, Vadi Yomer, Eini Ganuva, Reb Chama was saying that I say, which the Gemara is coming to explain in Reb Chama by Yosef's angle, says, I held that it's not deceptive because there's a fundamental difference. Zu, Avodah Sabakach, Pa'ar, that's how it's served. So, of course, it's not going to be Vatla. Zu, Ein Avodah Sabakach, but Aphrodite is not served that way. And since it has all the dirty water and people urinating in front of it, therefore, obviously not treating it like an Avodah Zarah, and that's why it was permitted for him, and it was a good response for him to go ahead and benefit from the bathhouse that's in front of Aphrodite. Another approach, Om Abai, he says, no, Gunuf Simahacha, what was deceptive about his response was from this part. The Kamale, because Gamliel said to him, Ani Le Basa Bigvula, he says, I didn't come into her Aphrodite's boundaries, he bought Bigvuli, she came into my boundaries, because the bathhouse was here first. And that says Abaya, what was Gamliel saying? Who cares that even if you would say that the Avodah Zarah of Aphrodite came before the bathhouse, why would that bother us? Who would care that he would be coming into her boundaries? But what's none? We learn in the Mishnah later on, the Fnanalchim Beis, it says, an Avodah Zarah that has a bathhouse or a garden, Nen and Mehen. You could have benefited from it as long as it's shalei b'toiv, as long as you don't give thanks to the priests that run the Avodah Zarah, because the actual benefit of the bathhouse or the garden is not forbidden, as I'm going to explain later on, because there's no sanctity for an Avodah Zarah until they go out and they worship it and do a sacrifice with that. So there's no problem. Why do you have to say that, oh, because she came into my boundaries? Who cares? Even if he went into our boundaries, it'd still be permitted. But one cannot have benefit from it if he's giving thanks to it. So that was what was bothering Rabbi Yishai, that it was deceptive what it would say, because it's nothing to do with going into boundaries or not. But says Rabbi Achav, and the Omer ain't the Genuva. He says, no, I hope that's not deceptive. Because Shaloi B'Toivis Rabbi Gamliel, benefiting from a bathhouse of Avodah Zarah, had Aphrodite been there first, his not giving thanks is K'Toivis Acherim Dami, is the same qualification as when other people do give thanks. Because since he's such a distinguished individual, it would be considered a favor for them when he's benefiting from it. And that's why he had to say that if the bathhouse were not first, then actually would have been forbidden, because that would have been like him giving thanks to the priest, which is forbidden, as we say later on. A third approach of Shimon bar Chiya Amar, he says, Gnuv si mahacha. What Rabbi Yishai held was deceptive was from this part. Because the Kamalai, Gamliel said to him, Zui medes al abif. That this Aphrodite is standing right over the pit of the dirty water, and everyone's urinating in front of it. Who cares? Everyone's urinating in front of it. But Ratznan, we learn the Mishnah later on from Gilmon after it says, Rak befenev, someone spits in front of his Avodah Zar. Or Hishpin befenev, he urinates in front of it. Or Giru, or he drags it in the mud or in excrement. Bizarre by Satsai, and he throws excrement at it. Harizu Eina Batela. That will not nullify the Avodah Zar. As Gemara later on from the Gilmon learns out, from the Pasuk where it says things disgraceful that they did to Avodah Zarah, and still it was considered afterwards as Avodah Zarah. So what is that? Why is that a reason, I'm a little saying, to consider it not problematic as Avodah Zarah? On that, Rabbi Acha was saying, I say it's not deceptive, because Hasam Lefi Shaita Hu Rasach Alam. There it's only temporarily, it's momentarily, that he's just angry at Avodah Zarah, and therefore he's doing something disgraceful. But Vahadim Afayisla, afterwards he appeases it, and that's why it's still considered an Avodah Zarah. In contrast, Hach over here by Aphrodite, Kol Shaita V'Shaita B'Zazul Kama. Every moment they're disgracing it. The dirty water's here, they urinate in front of it, and therefore that's different, and that would be considered not treating it as Eliheim, and that's what Melil was saying, an appropriate response, that it is permitted to have benefit from it, and it's not being treated like an Avodah Zarah. A fourth approach, Rabba Ulam, he says, Gnuf Simahacha. Rabbi Yeshua is concerned that it's considered deceptive from this part. Because the Ka'amalei Melil said to him, In Oimrim Nasa Merchitz Noi L'Aphroditi. We don't say that let's make the bathhouse as a beautification of Aphrodite. Ela Nasa Aphrodite Noi L'Merchitz. Rather, you're saying that Aphrodite is beautifying the bathhouse. So therefore the primary is the bathhouse, and it's not that the bathhouse is secondary and prohibited as Aphrodite. If anything, Aphrodite is secondary to the bathhouse. Now that, what was bothering Rabbi Yeshua was, V'chi Amar Nasa Merchitz L'Aphrodite Noi Mayhava. But why is that even a good point even? Even if you would say that let's make the bathhouse as a beautification of Aphrodite, that wouldn't make it forbidden anyway. Because V'tanya, learn the Brisa, it says, Oim Abayzeh L'Avodah Zarah. If someone says, let this house be for this Avodah Zarah, or Koyseh L'Avodah Zarah, let this cup be for Avodah Zarah, Loyer Maklum, he hasn't said anything. That doesn't make it forbidden. She'ein Hektish L'Avodah Zarah, there's no sanctification for an Avodah Zarah with just words, until actually they use it in the part of a sacrifice. So therefore that was deceptive. Don't say because it's not beautification for Aphrodite. Even if it was, that wouldn't make it forbidden. And that Vani Oimer, that's what he's saying, that Rabbi Acha was saying, that I say in the Gedua it's not deceptive, because Nehid is Sur Le Mitzra, you're right, although the Halacha tells us later on, in this Braisa that we quoted, that the bathhouse does not come forbidden by just saying, let's make it a beautification of Aphrodite, but Noi Mia Ika, but it ultimately would be a beautification if you're making something, a house, a bathhouse for the Avodah Zarah. And therefore, if it would be considered bathing as a beautification for the Avodah Zarah, it would be forbidden to beautify the Avodah Zarah. So although the bathhouse itself does not become forbidden, the bathhouse from having benefit, but it would be forbidden to bathe over there because that would be considered part of the beautification of the Avodah Zarah. And that's what Melu had to say, that no, we don't say make a merchatz as a noi for Aphrodite. If anything, we say making the Aphrodite a noi for the merchatz, and therefore bathing in the bathhouse was not problematic. For Melu, it was not considered benefiting from the Avodah Zarah of Aphrodite.